Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's town meeting season again in New Hampshire, a tradition often called the purest form of democracy, where citizens act as their own local legislatures. But exactly how this type of governance plays out depends upon where you live. About two-thirds of New Hampshire towns have what's called traditional town meeting. The other one-third have adopted a different format called SB2. This hour on The Exchange, we explain the difference, why it matters, and we explore a concern shared by both types of communities that fewer residents are involved in town government. Let's hear from you. What type of governance does your town have? And how do you feel about it? How much do you participate? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Howard Altschiller, executive editor and general manager of the Seacoast Media Group, which includes the Portsmouth Herald and Foster's Daily Democrat. And Howard, really nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Also with us, Peter Basilier, Milford town and school moderator for more than 10 years. Milford was one of the first towns to adopt the SB2 form of government. Peter, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
I'm pleased to be here.
Also with us, Chris Hawkins, Newmarket town and school moderator for 6 years. Chris has served in numerous local government positions, including town council and school board. Newmarket, by the way, is also an SB2 town. And Chris, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Also with us, Cordell Johnston, government affairs counsel for the New Hampshire Municipal Association. Cordell's a former selectman, former member and chairman of the planning board in Henniker, and he serves as the town moderator in Henniker, which holds the traditional town meeting. And Cordell, welcome back. Nice to see you, too.
Thank you. Good morning, Laura.
Well, all of you, before we get into some of the details and definitions, why does this matter, Howard Altschiller? You know, if I'm thinking, oh, town meeting coming up, I'm really busy, I have a million errands, Saturday's my errand day, why should I bother going?
Well, acknowledging that sometimes there are other things that might be on your agenda that day, I happen to have a kind of a Norman Rockwell view of town meeting.
And there is that painting, right?
There is that famous painting, and I live in Stratham. We still have a traditional town meeting, and we can always tell what kind of meeting it's going to be. You probably know Dave Emanuel, but to keep himself calm, he chews winter mints. And if he has a big bag of the mints, we know it's going to be a long day. We're probably talking about water and sewer. If it's a small bag, it's probably normal. We have a whole section of people who knit, and when the meetings go particularly long, maybe an entire sweater could be produced. You know, the ladies' auxiliary is there, and they're doing their bake sale and selling water. You're seeing neighbors you haven't seen for a long time, and we do the town's business. And, you know, some of the issues are silly, and some of them can be very profound. Just as one example, we talked about hunting in Stratham Hill Park a few years back, and the place was mobbed. And as we were talking, it was about safety and hunting and whether it was still appropriate, but it was also about what is our town, who are we? Are we still a rural agricultural community, or have we become a suburb where kids are everywhere and the things that we did for generations, we can't do anymore? And so I think it really puts you in touch with the people and the place where you live.
Wow. Okay. So, Peter, make the case. Why should I bother going?
Well, the irony for me is that for a national election in Milford, we'll get 70% turnout. We'll get voters that come to the polls, but they don't go to the deliberative session. And I think what the unfortunate part is many people don't realize that when you go to a deliberative session or to a town meeting, you're actually driving the services that you're going to receive as a resident, as well as the taxes that you'll pay as a resident. And so,
what could be more fundamental than that? The taxes you pay, the roads you drive on.
Exactly. You know, when you go to a national election, you're voting on a sentiment, a direction. But when you come to the deliberative session and voting, you're voting your pocketbook and your services.
Chris, convince me that I should show up.
You should show up because this is your chance to have a direct input into the quality of life in the town that you live in. Your voice is definitely heard. From having been on the school board and the town council, we take very, very seriously anybody who takes the time and trouble to come down and tell us what they think. So you do have a direct impact on the process. The other thing, and the other two speakers have touched on it, it's not about money per se. It's about an expression of the values of the community. So the amount of money that's at stake is not necessarily the driver of the discussion. It's an expression. If money is simply the value through which the values of the community are expressed, and it's a chance for people to get together and talk about what they think is important for them and their lives and their community, and it has a direct impact on their own quality of life. That's why you should go.
Cordell, slightly different question for you. As people prepare to go to town meeting, and again, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a newbie who's never been, there are a lot of definitions around town meeting, and I'd love for you to just very quickly give us a sentence or two on each of these. First of all, what is a warrant, and is it different from a warrant article?
Yes, a warrant, legally, a warrant is a command to do something. People think about a search warrant.
I see.
You get from a court, which gives the police the authority to search a property. So a warrant, historically, it was a command issued by the selectman to attend the town meeting because back in the 1600s, 1700s, people were obligated to go and could be fined for not going.
Wait a minute. That's why it's called a warrant? Because yeah. They could come get you from your house didn't go?
I don't think they did that.
But yeah.
It was a command to attend the town meeting. These days, it's generally phrased as you are requested to attend the annual meeting on this date.
So what's a warrant article, Cordell?
An article is an item that is placed on the warrant, and people frequently refer to warrant number 5. It's not warrant number 5, it's article number 5. So when you see the warrant, which is a request to attend the meeting, it lists, 5 to 30 to maybe 50 different items that are going to be acted on. Each one of those is a warrant article. So there will be a warrant article on the operating budget.
So there's only one warrant.
There's one warrant.
But there's a bunch of articles.
Many articles on it, yes.
What's a petition, Cordell?
A petition, excuse me. In general, articles are placed on the warrant by the selectmen. The selectmen control the warrant. However, if generally it's 25 citizens or more can submit a petition to put an article on the warrant, and it can be anything at all that can come up at town meeting. If they submit that petition, the article has to be placed on the warrant by the selectmen.
And do they do that before the meeting, or can they get yes. together right at the meeting and
nope,
do it?
Nope, they have to do it. I think it's by the fifth Tuesday before town meeting.
Okay, so that kind of gets into my next question. How much control does the individual citizen have in shaping what is discussed at town meeting beyond voting, yes or no? It sounds like if you can get yourself organized beforehand, you can have a significant say by saying, this is important to us. We want to put this on the warrant.
Yes. Again, for the most part, the articles are put on the warrant by the selectmen. But in theory, citizens can put any number of articles on the warrant that they want to.
Who writes the budget for the town? Because Chris mentioned, it's about a lot more than just the budget. But that is a big deal. So who writes that?
It depends on the town. Historically, the selectmen would prepare the budget, which goes on the warrant and then is voted on at the town meeting. Some towns now have a budget committee, and the budget committee is responsible for preparing the budget.
All right. This is great because, again, there's a lot of terms and things that go on. If you're one of the uninitiated like me, you might walk in and think, okay, what am I supposed to do here? A couple more real quickie questions for you, Cordell, and then we'll open it up to everybody. At town meeting, Cordell, are you also voting for town officers like selectmen or road agents, or are you just voting on budgetary issues like we need a new firehouse?
I'll make this as quick as I can. Historically, all of that happened at a single session of town meeting. You go back to the 1700s, you elected the selectman from the floor, the town clerk, the moderator, etc. Now, and there actually are still a few towns that have that single session. They use a ballot now, but they actually do that all in a single session.
In one day.
Right. But most towns have what we call a bifurcated town meeting, where they elect officers at one session, and that's what the voting day, that generally we think of it as an election, and then they have a what we call a business session, where they debate and discuss and act on everything else, like the budget and all other items.
Oh, so now I'm obliged to make time in my schedule for two separate events.
That's correct.
Okay, last question for you, and then I've got some other questions for you guys as well, and also some emails and calls coming in from listeners with their questions. When are school issues decided, Cordell?
Totally separate. The school districts also have a meeting, and the format is basically the same as a town meeting. And they have a voting session, which in, I think, almost all cases is held on the same day as it is for the towns, which
voting.
Is the second Tuesday in March. But then they also have a business session.
Where they hash out what do we want to do and so forth.
Correct.
Okay. And I know you guys want to jump in as well, because in these SB2 towns, it's a little bit different. Let me remind our listeners that you can join us as well. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So here's an email from Lynn in Sanborn that I want to read, because it has to do with SB2 and the whole difference. Some towns have SB2, some towns have traditional meeting. Lynn says, here's parts of her email, Lynn. I can't read the whole thing because it's long, but I really appreciate it. Lynn says, Sanborn's town meeting this year is again, for the 14th time, threatened by SB2. Yesterday, NHPR's coverage of Exeter's SB2 deliberation session should be listened to by Sanborn's citizens and voters. We still can enjoy democracy in action in our town meeting. We discuss, always get new information from the experienced, come to a decision with our vote, whether moderator Tim Lang is calling for a voice vote, a show of hands, with our voting cards held aloft or on a secret ballot. We are not alone in the voting booth with complex questions, sparely worded for the sake of the ballot space. Lynn says, it is true that not everyone can attend due to age or occupation or other good reason. Then it must be that those absent ones have or get to a level of trust that those who vote are voting with the town's needs in mind. Lynn, thank you so much for that email. And she says, once again, Sanborn was threatened by SB2. So I'm going to turn to our SB2 guys here. And Chris Hawkins, to you first, just remind everybody, what's SB2?
SB2 is, Cordell has alluded to it, it's separating the business session of the town meeting from the voting session. So in Newmarket, the town and school district have their deliberative session, the first session of the SB2 town meeting, on the same day. They discuss the warrant articles, there are petition warrant articles, there are presentations made, questions are asked, people have an opportunity to find out, ask more questions about things that are on the warrant. And then if there's no action taken to amend the warrant article, then it goes on the warrant as presented. So then we'll have, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks later, a week from yesterday, we'll have what we think of as the election, where you go in and you cast your ballot on the warrant article as it was amended or not, as the case may be, by the deliberative session.
By this group of folks, you know, a couple weeks beforehand.
Correct. I think what Lynn may be alluding to is participation, and it's very often thought of that in SB2 towns there's less participation in the deliberative session, because there are, without getting into too much detail, there are constraints on what the voters can do to the warrant articles during the deliberative session. They can't completely rewrite them. They can't increase by more than 10% the amount of money that's being expended, for example. So there's a perception that SB2 has resulted in decreased participation in towns, and I can see Pete nodding his head at me.
Yeah, so perception. So you're saying, though, Chris, perception is not reality?
It depends on how you look at it, Laura. My feeling is that if like we had about maybe 50 or 60 people at our deliberative sessions.
Again, that's where you hash it out.
where they hash it out. That's pretty low in a town with about 7,000, 7,500 registered voters. That's very, very low. On the other hand, if there is a bond issue, we're going to spend a significant amount of money on like for a school, they'll turn out in the hundreds and hundreds. So my feeling is that when people are very concerned, they turn out in large numbers and make their views known. And if they're relatively happy with the way things are going, they don't. That's my preferred way of looking at it.
So, Peter, again, Lynn says threatened by SB2, and people who love traditional town meeting really feel strongly that, you know, it is better. Why did your town, Milford, decide to go to SB2?
Well, I was on the budget committee and ultimately the school board under the old former government, the old town meeting, and there's a lot to be said for the old town, the traditional town meeting, because voters who are present can listen to the arguments being made by both sides and make up their minds. And it's very common for people to be swayed by a persuasive argument for or against the article. With the SB2 form of government, we have less of that. There's some that's possible at the deliberative session where you have, in Milford's case, we had maybe 115 people at the town and about 40 or so at the school deliberative sessions. So there's less opportunity to persuade a large body of people about the merits of a case. The upside of SB2 is that anyone who wants to participate can go to the polls and vote on the warrant articles that were affirmed by the deliberative session and put onto the ballot. So it's more the potential for participation is greater with SB2 because you either vote next Tuesday or in person, or you get an absentee ballot, and you're still able to vote on all of those articles, which in the traditional form of government, you know, when meetings go very late in the night, et cetera, people tend to back away, and I don't think there's as much participation in a traditional form, but there are merits to the traditional form of government.
So, Howard, dating myself a little bit here, I remember when SB2 came about, and the theory was more participation, as Peter says, more fair to people who can't turn out for the whole day, who can't stay till midnight. But how has that worked out in practice?
Well, actually, I can remember it was passed in 95, and I can remember as Exeter and Hampton were talking about it. It wasn't so much about that. It was more about people felt intimidated on the floor of town meeting. They didn't want to vote against the police funding with the police, you know, the police officers there. They didn't want to vote against fire. They didn't want to vote against the school. And so they felt like they were held captive and they wanted to vote in the privacy of a voting booth. That's what I remember the argument used to be. You're not hearing that quite so much anymore. And when talking about SB2, we had some mischief and also some quality of debate issues on the Seacoast. It sounds like you had a discussion about Exeter where there was a citizen petition. Someone came in and wanted to put a 3% tax cap in the town. And on the floor of deliberative session, it was basically rendered meaningless because it became a 30% tax cap, and you know, so basically no tax cap at all. And we had a very rare thing where in Hampton, the moderator actually criticized the quality of the presentation of the budget because there really was none. All the time was spent on, you know, smoking at town beaches and other more superficial things rather than getting into the meat of the town business.
And again, that Exeter story you're referring to was done by our colleague Todd Bookman, and folks should definitely check it out. It's very interesting. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Cordell, what types of communities have gone towards this SB2 format, and what types of communities have, you know, stuck with the traditional town meeting, like Henniker?
Well, I'm not sure whether you can classify them into types of communities. I will say that the bulk of the towns that have gone to SB2 are in the southern part of the state, mostly the larger towns. But there are some smaller towns farther north that have adopted SB2. Sunapee has SB2. There are a couple other smaller ones not coming to me right now. And so I think that it's, in general, the larger towns where people feel like it's harder to participate. Their voice doesn't matter as much. But and I will say in Henniker, we've had it on the ballot at least six times.
To switch to SB2?
To switch to SB2.
Oh, really?
And it has been defeated each time.
Defeated soundly or by a whisker?
It has varied. And I will say I have actively campaigned against SB2 in our town. But our school district did pass it a year or 2 years ago. And our cooperative school district also has SB2. So I don't think you can really say it's, you know, this kind of town or that kind of town. It's sort of all over the map, but generally concentrated in the southern part of the state.
Peter, go ahead, jump in.
Lest anyone thinks that SB2 is a panacea for long meetings, I set a personal best this past February, where the town deliberative session actually lasted 8.5 hours.
Oh, my goodness. You're not convincing me to come, Peter.
No. But we do take a half-hour break, and Dollars for Scholars puts out a wonderful spread of sandwiches and such. So, yeah.
What makes, Chris, I'm going to turn to you, what makes a town meeting successful, where you walk out and you go, that was great?
I feel like, from my perspective, a meeting is successful if everybody who wants to speak has an opportunity to do so, if there's a wide range of opinions expressed, and if people, you kind of develop a sense for the room. If people have a sense, if you have a sense that people are satisfied with the discussion, and we've gotten through the business from my perspective in orderly fashion, then I feel like it's a successful meeting. And then I follow along on the very active social media, which every town has, just to see what the reaction was afterwards, to see what we need to do to improve. And if there's either no reaction or it's generally positive, then I feel pretty good about it.
Well, and there are certain rules, right, Chris, that you as the moderator have kind of backing you up, right? I mean, you have certain rights to keep things under control.
Yeah, it's my primary responsibility is to make sure everybody who wants to speak has a fair and equal opportunity to do so, that questions get answered, and that the meeting moves along in orderly fashion. I don't take sides. I don't vote myself.
That's interesting. No tiebreakers from from the moderator.
That's a whole discussion among the moderators. I've never been in a situation where I've had to break a tie, so I've never been faced with the question of whether I would actually do so. But I generally don't, and I just try to treat everybody fairly and equally, and I think that's the essence of my job.
Howard, what do you think? What makes a town meeting great?
Well,
or what can make it go off the rails?
Well, I want to say this because these guys can't because, you know, they're modest. But, you know, really the key to it is the moderator. The moderator sets the tone in the room. The moderator makes sure to set the ground rules out front that we're going to respect each other. We're not going to be yelling out insults. We're not going to be breaking into wild applause with the people we agree. They're going to make the person who's – it's very nerve-wracking to go and speak at town meeting. And I don't know about in your towns, but in Stratham, it's like a poker game. You have no idea what people think as you're walking to the microphone. You know, you can't read their faces. You don't know whether they're with you or against you. And the moderator can give that – feeling of comfort that you are going to be heard and you are going to be listened to.
All right. Lots more to talk about with town meeting coming up after a short break. And we'll keep taking your emails, so keep sending them in. exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a six-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, with town meetings season upon us, we're looking at this tradition and how it plays out differently around the state. Also, I want to let you know Civics 101, NHPR's podcast refresher course, has launched a new series about civics in New Hampshire. And this weekend, they're releasing an episode about the history and ins and outs of town meetings. So if you want to learn more, we've got a link on our website to Civics 101. Our website, of course, nhpr.org/exchange. And let's hear from you now with your questions and your observations about town governance in your community. 1-800-892-6477 is our email, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, lots of emails coming in from our listeners, so let's go to them. Tom in Gilmanton says one of the central arguments for going from the traditional town meeting format to the SB2 format is to enable more people to vote. Is there evidence to suggest that that this actually happens? That's a great question, Tom. He also says, my own town of Gilmanton went to SB2 a few years ago, and I see way fewer attendees at the deliberative session than the number of people who used to turn out for traditional town meeting. The results are a real loss of sense of community, plus voters who are less informed when they actually vote to the extent that they didn't attend the informative deliberative session. So, gentlemen, this is the critique of SB2. And Cordell, you're nodding, so I'm going to go to you first.
I think it's a valid critique. I think it's certainly true that probably more people turn out to vote on the official ballot when they're voting on those warrant articles, but far fewer people participate in the discussion and the debate. And I appreciate the concern there that people are not as informed. And as an example, Henniker has a traditional town meeting. 2 years in a row now, we had a petitioned article on the warrant about moving a road. And this road went within, I think, 10 feet. It was a very old road, very old house, went within 10 feet of the house, and it split the house from the barn. Property owner was concerned about...
Oh, yeah, that would be a concern.
Was concerned about the safety.
Sure.
And the property owner was actually willing to pay to move the road, but doing it would have required taking some land out of a conservation easement, and that created a lot of opposition. It was very contentious. A lot of details in there. 2 years ago, we had an hour-long debate about it, and then... ultimately, it was tabled for a year. And then last year, we had another hour-long debate about it. It was a great debate, great arguments on both sides. I'm not going to tell you how I voted because we ultimately voted, I think, by secret ballot.
Oh, so you can vote by secret ballot in traditional town meeting.
There is a procedure for that. But it was exactly the kind of debate that could occur if you went into a voting booth and saw the question, should we move... Quaker Street, you know, whatever, you would have no idea how to vote on that without having heard that debate. So I think that writer makes a very good point.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, let's go to our callers. And Susan's joining us from Milford. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I participated in the deliberative session in Milford for the school budget, and it was interesting that a group of special interests could kind of control what came out of the deliberative session. There was a proposal to reduce a bunch of paraprofessional positions from the superintendent, and so quite a few paraprofessionals showed up at the deliberative and voted to increase the school budget with the intention of having those positions not be removed. You know, not really understanding the broader implications of increasing the school budget in a town where people don't really like to pay more for the schools.
So, Susan, wondering about special interests coming to these meetings where not a lot of other people are there, let's be honest. And, Peter, I'll turn to you because it's your town. Mm-hmm. Taking control of the situation and creating a warrant that may not reflect the interests of the entire town.
Well, I wouldn't use the word control, Laura, only because they're residents and they're voters and they're all checked in. So they're entitled to be there.
Right. If others don't like it,
they chose
they
to be
show
there.
Up.
Right. Well, so that's part of it. I mean, so absolutely. You just with traditional town meeting, you will tend to see people with a position on an article showing up in mass. That's always been the way, and it has been, and it will be. I think the important point is that deliberative sessions are incredibly important for the reason that Susan mentioned, that you're talking about budget and you're talking about staffing. But I'll take the town in Milford this year. We actually, at deliberative session, changed a warrant article from a $2.5 billion bond to an $85,000 study.
Wow, that's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. And it's in my tenure, in 10 years, that's the first time we've had such a significant change to a warrant article. And it was the 100 or so people who were present at the town meeting that changed what the select board had put onto the warrant into what those people who were present wanted to actually happen over the course of the next year.
So 100 or so people. How big is Milford, Peter?
We're about 15,000 with just over 11,100 that are registered to vote.
Wow. So that is a very small slice of your town.
Oh, it's very small. Now, and when we vote on the warrants, you know, next week, there'll probably be about 17% of that that'll show up. So, what, you know, 1,600, 1,700 people will actually vote.
Okay. Chris, go ahead. I can see you want to jump in.
Yeah. I think it's important that whether it's SB2 or traditional town meeting, there's always the opportunity for gamesmanship by people in the audience who really understand the process and how it works. So there are people who can come in, either petition a warrant article or make changes to warrant articles if they have a strong enough interest in doing so. That can be done. There are limits to the changes that can be made. But the downside of traditional town meeting is you can have these all-day sessions, and it simply becomes an endurance contest to see who's the last group left standing. They can go back and revisit warrant articles and change votes that have been taken earlier in the day. At least in principle, that kind of thing can be done. So the best way to protect yourself from any kind of gamesmanship is to show up and participate and educate yourself as to what's going on, and that's what I encourage everyone to do, no matter what town they live in.
Yeah, although it's tough. I mean, you know, I'm get up pretty early to come in here and host this show, and I really don't think I could stay out until midnight at a town meeting, Chris.
Right, and we don't do that. Newmarket,
or when my kids were little, I certainly, you know, couldn't do that.
Sure. In Newmarket, we completed our entire deliberative sessions for both the school and the town in an hour this past February.
Okay.
So we tend to not have lengthy all-day deliberative sessions. I tend to think that's because people are relatively happy with the way things are going, although they're paying a lot of taxes, but maybe they feel like they're getting value.
Yeah. So your deliberative session, again, this is the hash out where you figure out, you know, how much and what, are relatively short.
Yeah, they've been relatively short during my tenure.
Okay.
Unless there's a bond issue. That's
Howard,
different.
Go ahead.
We were talking about this at our editorial board meeting this week, and this sort of like, well, if people aren't going to show up and if they aren't going to deliberate, What's the solution? You live in a city, you elect city councilors, and those city councilors presumably are deeply informed on all the issues, are elected directly by the voters, and then they make the decisions. And Dan Chartrand, who's a former Exeter selectman, you have him on because he owns the Water Street bookstore. You know, he was saying, does it really make sense for a town that spends $35 million a year to make all its major financial decisions in a single day? Wouldn't it make more sense to have a more representative form of government? You could be more agile. Now, I'm glad Chris is here because my understanding is they have a town council, but there's two open town council seats and nobody's running. And so you can't have representative government if nobody's willing to represent.
Well, that's another issue. I'm glad you raised that, Howard. Cordell, to you, I have heard that, you know, as we talk about participation, citizen participation, your average person showing up or not, that another concern among municipal officials is that people just aren't running for these offices, you know, that help shape the budgets, that help run the meetings.
That is a significant problem. And it's not just people running for office, it's finding people to fill all kinds of positions in municipal government, whether it's elected or appointed. But for example, as you mentioned, I was elected town moderator in Henniker last year. At about the same time, the school district moderator moved out of town, so there was a vacancy there. And I was asked whether I wanted to be school district moderator. I said no.
By the way, these are unpaid positions.
Yeah.
So two unpaid positions in addition to your day job.
Right. I said no. But after months and months and months of looking for someone to do it, they still couldn't find anyone. So I said, okay, I'll be the school district moderator too.
Oh, my
too.
Goodness.
But, yeah, it is a problem, I think. I don't know whether Chris or Pete have ever had a challenge, whether anyone's ever run against them for moderator. But a lot of
or
these
everybody
positions.
Else says, thank you so much, Chris and Pete, for doing the job.
Yes,
good job. Please stay there because nobody else wants to do
people
it.
People come up to me all the time and say, thank you for doing this because I sure as hell wouldn't want to do it.
Wow.
Or nobody else would. So I think there's rarely a competitive race for a moderator. Sometimes selectmen, there's only one person running. Sometimes you're for positions like planning board. Sometimes you're lucky if you can get enough people to run to fill the seats, and that is unfortunate.
Okay. Well, Susan, thank you for the call. Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us as we talk about town governance. Tell us how it works in your town. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Joel, who says he lives in an SB2 town. Joel says, from the perspective of 15 years as a selectman, 7 on the school board, I can say without equivocation that SB2 has reduced the quality of civic participation in our local democracy. Joel says, here's how. We have more people voting with less information. Voters who are unwilling or unable to sit through or even participate in the discussions on the warrant articles are easily swayed to vote no reflexively on every money article and to vote based entirely on what they have learned at the dump or on the internet. This is foolishness, Joel says, codified in legislation. I got to say, Chris, we're getting a lot of people dumping on SB2 today. I wonder what you think.
I don't know what to think. It's
sounds like it's working for you.
I don't know if it's working for us. It's what we have, and it's what we make work. Is it changing the outcome of votes or elections? I don't know the answer to that. My experience has been when there's issues on the warrant that people really care about, then they turn out. And I think that's independent of the system of government that we utilize. Yes, we have two town council seats for which no one applied. We have 4 people who are looking to write it, who are seeking write-in votes for that position. That's a concern and unprecedented in my experience. I don't know. I certainly agree that since SB2 has been around, the number of people who show up for deliberative session appears to be reduced. Is that changing the quality of the output? I don't know the answer to that. People do have other avenues to find out what's going on. The town makes tremendous efforts to get information out. Our meetings are televised. There's a weekly newsletter that comes out of the town. There's a lot more avenues for people to get information. I don't know whether they are more or less informed than they were in the past, because it's very, very hard to quantify that. I personally do not believe that the quality of the government services or our ability to deliver what the people want has been diminished in any way on account of SB2.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Well, speaking of sort of getting information, finding out, as you said, Chris, what's really going on. John sent us an email. He says, those that say that the only way to be informed is by attending the discussion are being presumptive. John says, in this day and age of social media, as well as multiple news sources, it is very possible to be informed on the issues without attending deliberative sessions. John says, the biggest problem with attendance is that they are held on weekdays, while regular meetings can be held on Saturdays. John, thank you for that email. And what do you think, Howard, that, in an era of social media and, news and information everywhere, is it easy to get good information on what's happening in your town?
Well, we could be here a month and talk about it. It's a huge issue, and it's an issue that so many of the other issues grow out of. Where are people getting their information? Is it fact-based or is it opinion-based? Is it a mixture of both?
Because local newspapers used to cover these town meetings extensively.
Right.
And they don't have the staff or money to do that anymore.
We do cover most of them.
We do.
We advance them, let people know what's coming up, and then we'll get out there and cover them. But In a you know 15 to 20 inch story, there's only so much detail you can give people, and there's a ton of towns covered by all the papers, and you know our industry is definitely you know has its challenges, and I can tell you there's nothing that hits me like a dagger more than sitting in a town meeting and saying people saying, well, why didn't we know about that?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, it was out there, but we, you know, I can't come into your house and make you read it.
But you can probably get the warrant, right, Cordell, online if you want to see what's happening at town meeting.
Well, you can get the warrant, but all that tells you is what are the things that we're going to be voting on. And I guess if I can jump in here, I'd like to remind people that the town meeting is the town's legislative body. It is perfectly analogous to the state legislature at the state level. And so when people say, well, I can learn about the issues by reading the newspaper or going on Facebook, I wonder if your local state representative said, I don't need to go to the committee meetings or House sessions. I'll read about the issues in the newspaper or on Facebook, and then I'll go vote based on that. I think we would say that person shouldn't be serving in the legislature. I think people need to understand that participating in town meeting is a responsibility. And if you don't feel like you can spend 5 or 6 hours there, that's fine. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. But then maybe you ought to be leaving it to the people who are willing to put in that effort. It's not the kind of thing you wake up on Saturday morning and say, I don't have anything else to do. There's nothing good on TV.
You
maybe
need to make
I'll
a plan.
Yeah, you and you can know when town meeting is going to be. I can tell you right now when our town meeting will be next year, and so I can plan ahead to do that. It takes some planning, but it's a responsibility.
What do you think about this comment, Peter? That you know, you could learn about what was decided at the deliberative session in an SB2 town. Anywhere on Facebook, on online, the information may be accurate or not, depending if somebody's putting their opinion in there. But then you could go to the voting session and vote yes or no.
Well, I think the problem with social media is that there's incorrect information as well as there is correct information, and also I think just based on one quick look I took of the results last year. Not everybody who talks on or writes on Facebook actually participates at the polls even. It was really sad because we had an article last year about kindergarten, and I went through Facebook posts about the topic, and there were 85 different people who had made comments about it, and only half of those people who made comments actually went to the polls to vote on an article that they were vociferously talking about online, whether pro or con. So one of the cautions that came away from my one data point is that while certainly social media is a way for spreading information, we shouldn't think that just because an item is being widely discussed on Facebook or other social media that it is actually going to result in people going to the polls and taking action on their opinions.
All right. Well, coming up, a lot more of our conversation about town meeting, how it's changing, what has stayed the same, and a lot more of your comments. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what's the status of town meetings? Let's hear from you. Does your town hold traditional town meeting, or has it adopted the SB2 version? And which type of governance do you think is better? Also, want to let you know, Civics 101, NHPR's podcast refresher course, has launched a new series about civics in New Hampshire. And this weekend, they're releasing an episode about the history and ins and outs and details of town meetings. We've got a link to that on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Right now, though, join us with your questions and comments and observations about your own town's form of government. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. SB2Deliberative.org. Well, all of you, every year the usual issues come up at town meeting or SB2 deliberative sessions. You know, roads and spending on roads and town buildings. And in the school district meetings, there's always, you know, teachers and buildings to talk about. But Howard, to you first, what are some particular issues that might come up at these meetings this year?
Right. Well, I jotted down a list of some of them, and they're interesting, and they are very town-specific. So, for example, in Epping, they're going to have a non-binding question about the Granite Bridge natural gas pipeline and storage facility.
Oh, okay. That's a big deal for that town.
Right. And it's not binding in any way. Nothing is going to happen as a result of it, but it will give the town leaders the will of the people. You know, their voice will be heard going forward. Both Greenland and Exeter are looking for money to improve their libraries. Rye, as it does every year, is fighting over what to do about its town hall. Should they renovate it or tear it down? And one thing we haven't talked about is that bond issues, you need a 60% majority in order to pass. And so if a town is evenly split on something, you can just talk about it for years and never get it over the finish line. Dogs are always on the warrant, it seems.
Wait, dogs?
Dogs are always on the warrant because somebody is walking their dog off leash and it bites another dog and something terrible happens and everybody wants to, you know, say we need a leash law and under control is not enough. So several of our town have those. Big bond issue out of the cooperative school district in Exeter, $17.8 million. And at that SB2 session, less than 100 people showed up to advance a $17.8 million bond issue for the cooperative middle school. We referenced the smoking ban on the beaches already. And then Barrington is looking for money both for a town hall renovation and a library renovation at the same time. And they're definitely in competition for the same pot of money.
Oh, I see. So it gets to what somebody said earlier. I think it was Chris. You know, it's money, sure, but it's also a reflection of what you care about as a citizenry.
Right. And it's strategic. I mean, was it smart to go for both at the same time? And maybe you get neither, or maybe you figure out which one is the more important one and advance that first, get that passed, and then do the next one.
Now, Cordell, what are you hearing about in terms of specific issues this year? You don't need to give us the whole, you know, town by town list, but what issues keep popping up this year?
One of the things that I've heard about, and there are actually a couple of bills in the legislature about this, are the use of OHRVs, off-highway recreational vehicles, also generally referred to
ATV
as ATVs,
restrictions
on public roads. And there actually is a petitioned article on our warrant about, I think what it says is, do you favor the continued use of OHRVs on public roads? And what's interesting is even if the voters vote no on that, that's not going to be binding because the use of OHRVs on public roads is actually controlled by the selectmen. So that gets into an interesting point that frequently there are items, generally petitioned articles on the warrant that that may not actually be binding. So, for example, you know, I've seen things like a petition warrant article to fire the town administrator. And even if that passes, that has no effect because the legislative body doesn't control that. The selectmen control personnel decisions.
So do people do these sort of votes just, as Howard alluded to state how they feel?
Yes, and frequently there's a petition warrant article that is directing the selectmen to do something, and you know when I was a selectman, if there was something like that, we could say, well, we don't have to do that, and legally you'd be right, but politically you might want to pay attention to what
sure.
the voters are saying.
Sure. So some of these issues I can imagine, gentlemen, would bring people out. The hunting issue you mentioned earlier, Howard. Where ATVs can go and where they can't. That'll probably get people to come to the meeting.
Yeah.
What about Keno, Peter? Is this something that you expect to pop up in town meetings around the state? And is this happening in Milford?
It has. We have already passed it.
Have passed it. Okay.
So it's in place in Milford now. This year, our big issues are a potential solar farm on town-owned property.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, the other one was our continued participation in a regional communications center for emergency services. So those are the, those have been the two big draws, and actually they were the very first and very last warrant articles that were taken up in our marathon session. But those are the kinds of things that bring people out. It's very real, impactful decisions that have to be made. I mean, in this case in Milford, they're two, you know, very different kinds of topics, but they really do go, as Chris said, to the quality of life, but also the quality of the services that we're providing.
How about you, Chris? What are some of the issues that seem to get people really interested?
Yeah, I'm thinking of an example of, this is 3 or 4 years ago now. We have a nonprofit organization in town that, as part of its mission, provides rides to doctor's appointments for elderly folks who might otherwise not be able to get there. And in recognition of the significance of that service in the community, the town makes a $2,500 contribution to that entity. A decision was made through the budget process, I wasn't part of it, to eliminate that funding. And then a warrant article was petitioned to restore it. This is $2,500. The discussion of that issue consumed maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours during our deliberative session. And that's the basis of me saying it's not about money. It's about the values. It's about what that money represents. That same deliberative session, the same group of people did not bat an eyelash at a $7 or $8 million town budget and asked no questions about it.
But $2,500 to ride elderly people,
not because of the money,
appointments,
but because of what the money represented and the significance of that service to the community and to the elderly population in particular. That's the kind of thing that happens, I think, in every town.
Yeah, and I think it's partly because people can grasp $2,500. They can't grasp $25 million. And so I think a large part of the reason we spend so much time on small dollar amounts is because people understand what that money is. They can feel it in their wallet. The big dollar amounts, they just don't understand.
That's really interesting. I did read that 29 towns, I think, are going to consider Keno this year. Howard, I have also read that Keno isn't quite working out the way it was expected. I just wonder if you can give us a sense of what's happening.
Right. So it was passed by the legislature as a way to fund full-day kindergarten. And the idea was that we would allow communities to opt into Keno, and the money they raised would then be used to offset giving towns that didn't have full-time kindergarten already or were already offering it the money. And now 29 more towns are going to do it. I think they had hoped to raise $9 million. They've raised $3
million. Wow, that's a big gap.
And so there's bills, again, in the legislature. For example, David Waters out of Dover is saying we should fund kindergarten through the normal education trust fund and then take this Keno money and use that for school building aid, which has been suspended pretty much since the Great Recession. And I think a bill also has passed the House saying let's not use a Keno money for education. Let's fund that out of the education trust fund.
So, Peter, you said you have Keno in Milford, correct? How about in Newmarket, Chris?
Keno passed on a petition to article either last year or the year before.
Okay. And Henniker doesn't have a lot of bars and restaurants, Cordell, but you got a few. So
yeah,
how about Keno? Do you have Keno there?
To tell you the truth, I don't remember. I think we had it on the warrant last year, but I don't remember whether it passed. But there were a lot of towns that passed it last year. There may be more that have it this year, but it is not on our warrant this year. So either it already passed or they've given up.
How about in your town, Howard?
Well, it went down in flames in town meeting in Stratham.
And really?
Yeah, for some reason, this was one of the issues that people decided to get worked up about. And the other interesting thing is that even if you're a town, you can say no to Keno, but you still get the Keno money.
You're held harmless. So,
exactly.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. A couple more emails from our listeners. Paul and Althea wrote in. They said, on the naming of select men versus select board, given the number of women representing towns, select board is a better term. It's a good question, and it does feel sort of awkward saying select men when I'm sure there are plenty of women who serve. What about this, Cordell? Are towns kind of sticking with the old language or moving into the new?
Yeah, and I suppose maybe I need to apologize. I cannot get out of the habit of saying selectmen because historically that was the legal term for it. But actually, I know a couple of towns have had a debate about this at the select board level. I think it was Goffstown during this past year had a pretty contentious debate about it. And if I recall, at first they voted to continue to call it the Board of Selectmen, but then I believe there may have been a change. And I was going to say don't quote me, but I guess I'm on the air. don't hold me to this. My recollection is that ultimately they decided they were going to refer to themselves as the Select Board.
Okay. Well, and given the demographics of our panel today, you guys are all guys. That's the way it worked out, and that's fine. We're happy to have you. But I wonder, Peter, are more women getting involved in town government?
Oh, absolutely. And I think New Hampshire is at the forefront from the state level all the way through all of our legislative bodies. Personally, I used to think that selectmen was the way to go because that is tradition. It goes back to the 1700s. But the reality is that it is mixed gender on representation on the boards. We call members of the school as school board members, all right? Why not call them select board members and just make it a gender-neutral term? It seems to be the way to go. And when I talk about our board of selectmen, as they're still called, I refer to them as the select board.
Well, it's interesting. And we say member of Congress. We wouldn't say Congressman Anne McLean Custer. So why would we say selectman Laura Kanoy? That I don't know, just seems weird.
Yeah, we just changed in our hometown because we got our first female select person in a really long time. And so we went from selectmen to select board.
And I think there are one or two boards in the state of New Hampshire where all of the members are women. I can't remember where they are, but I'm pretty sure I've seen that.
So do they call it Board of Selectmen when they're all women?
I suspect they do not.
Right. Well, all of you, this has been great. I have learned a lot, and I want to let everybody again know that our Civics 101 team is putting out an episode this weekend on town meeting, the ins and outs, lots of history there. We'll put a link on our website. It's nhpr.org/exchange. Howard Altshuler, thank you for coming in. Really appreciate it. Howard Altshuler is executive editor, general manager of the Seacoast Media Group. Peter, great to see you. Thank you. Peter Basilier, he's from Milford, where he is the town and school moderator. Chris Hawkins, thank you for making the trip. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Hawkins, he's Newmarket's town and school moderator. And Cordell Johnson, always nice to see you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Cordell Johnston. He's government affairs counselor for the New Hampshire Municipal Association, as well as holding a number of roles in his hometown of Henniker. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.